He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And I want to start off this morning's episode with the following, because it happened to some friends of mine in our hometown. On April 22nd, 2020, Patrick Sullivan of the Lakeville Journal wrote an article about car thefts are on the rise in the area. So, and there was a warning from our resident state trooper, Chris Sorrell, and the warning basically said, if you park your car anywhere outside a locked garage, take your keys out and lock the cars and put them away. So this morning I'm online on a real estate matter, and I find out that the person I'm on the line with came out of his house the other day and went out to get in his car with all his real estate stuff in it, and the car was nowhere to be found in the driveway, and it is gone. And it happened to be a Mazda CX-5, I believe, SUV. Black. I do not have the license plate, because guess what? The owner doesn't have the license plate anywhere but in the car and on the car. And the license plates, of course, went off with the car. So I cannot give the listeners of this show a license plate, Connecticut plate number, whatever.
So is it a Connecticut plate?
Yeah, it's a Connecticut plate. It's a leased car, however. And we'll get to that in a minute. But it's a Connecticut plate, and there is no information in the owner's possession outside the vehicle. So when I asked him to please text me or send me the plate number, he can't do it because he doesn't know what it is. So here's another idea. If you have a car and an iPhone, take a picture of your car and take a picture of your car's plate and keep it in your iPhone should you ever lose your car.
Or don't put your iPhone in the car.
Most likely all the documents on any lease or registration are in the car too. Anyways, we had quite a chat about this, and I suggested, it was a lease, I suggested he stop payment on the lease right away. I don't know what the legal ramifications are, because if he doesn't have the car, he might as well try to figure out, he might as well stop paying on it. And I suggested to him, I asked him if he had any equipment in the car so that he could send a signal to the car to stop it from operating. And the answer was no. I do not know whether the information or the computer information within the car has that capability so that Mazda could do it, the lease company could do it, or somebody else could do it remotely. But there seems to be no way, and the car has not yet appeared, and they're now 3 days into it, I believe, or maybe four. And it could be in a chop shop in Hartford, a chop shop anywhere else in the state. It could be wrecked. It could be abandoned. But the car has not been found.
So,
and
Robin,
this is one of those situations where I don't know how industrious our state police and or our local police are at a long-term search attempt on lost cars.
Jay, what were you going to say?
Because they happen every day.
Well, no, well, this was my question, I guess. Is this an isolated incident, or are cars disappearing on a regular basis? I mean,
The article that Patrick Sullivan had in the Journal that said, the warning states that there has been an increase in car thefts and in items stolen from cars that are left unlocked and outside overnight. Now, this has been an ongoing thing for years in urban areas for sure. But apparently there are, according to the article, there are people that are coming up to the more rural areas of the state because of the comfort level that we have, as this owner said. We don't have any theft of cars in Salisbury. And nobody thinks about it. And I myself am prone to leaving keys in my car parked overnight, no longer, in my driveway.
Can I interject, please?
Yeah.
And that is that there had been... there has been a rash of thefts.
Correct.
Of high-end, you know, less likely to be a beater, high-end cars, and there has been since March, shall we say, since a lot of people came up here, they just leave their keys or their fobs
in
their
car.
That's
right, Joe. And for the listeners, you should be listening to this more than laughing at it. I laughed at it because of the person who it was, because, you know, you wouldn't think that this person The person isn't targeted because of who it is, let me tell you. Somebody's driving around looking at cars parked in driveways, and if they are on the prowl to take one, they get out of the car and they go and check the door, and if the door is unlocked, they go into the car, and if the car's got the keys in the console or in the ignition or whatever it might be, and a lot of the cars are these new push-button fobs or buttons on the dash, so the keys have to be in the car, and they apparently, in this case, just drove off with it. And it happened to have a lot of business stuff in the back seat or in the trunk as well. So the person didn't just lose a car, which is certainly not the worst thing in the world to have happen, but he has lost some business stuff as well, which may or may not be important. I don't know. But the point is that while the state police are actively patrolling the towns to try to prevent thefts, we have one state trooper in Salisbury. We have no state trooper, resident troopers in Sharon. Kent has one. Canaan has one, I believe. Or maybe Kent doesn't have one anymore. I'm not sure. But one trooper is not going to patrol 60 miles of roads within a township or whatever on a 24-hour basis because they work shifts and aren't on to be able to possibly catch a group of people who might be doing this kind of thing.
One of two things is going to happen. Either somebody stole the car to take it for a joyride and it was dumped somewhere and typically you would recover it pretty quickly, or the car is long gone. If it's organized crime, either on a small scale or a bigger scale, the car is gone, never to be seen again. In another life, when I lived back in Europe, it was notorious. This was in the 90s. That if you had a car stolen, and the chances were real, and it didn't matter how well you locked it, cars were stolen every day, and within a couple of hours, they were on a boat and off to another continent.
And correct. That's true, Jay. Thankfully, I guess, the cars are less easy to just jump. I don't know whether it's less easy to rewire the ignitions or not in the new cars, but the fact of the matter is, the article, the Lakewood Journal article said, these incidents are due to increased traffic from juveniles in other municipalities within our state. Whether that's factually correct or not, I don't know. But anyways, the point is, if you leave your car outside, visible from the street for anybody to see, you better take your keys in and you should lock your car. And enough on that, I think. The next thing is, Jay sent me a list this morning. I'm going to go to the Bronco topic, and then I'm going to turn it over to Jay, I think, because the new Ford Bronco, as we said in, I think, the last show we did, is now out for the public to see and put an order in on. I don't know when we're going to see one on the streets around our listing area, but it probably won't be too long. We do have a dealer right here, and... yeah, that's right. It isn't coming out till next year, apparently. But now we have the inevitable stories of Bronco versus the Jeep Wrangler. And I've got a cheat sheet here about a comparison of the base models, because this is how the manufacturers compete with already existing other manufacturers' vehicles alike. And so we have the 2021 Bronco versus the 2020 Wrangler. The base price for the cheapest vehicle, which is a two-door model, is $29,995 for the Bronco and $29,790. $29,790 for the Jeep Wrangler. Now, I don't know what options are on there because I haven't checked it out yet. The base engine for the Bronco is a 2.3-liter 4. The base engine, the Wrangler base price for the two-door with a 3.6-liter V6 engine is on this list I'm looking at. The wheelbases are within 0.3 tenths of an inch of each other. The largest available tires for the Bronco are 39 inches for that and 33 for the Jeep, and then a few other things. They're all within inches or pounds of or dollars of each other until you start adding up the options that you are going to find you need to have to get the vehicle you want. But we're going to have a lot of articles in all the news magazines or auto magazines and all that and comparisons once the Broncos are on the road. I guess test mules or test versions of them are out there for the magazines to write about, and so we will see them on the magazine stand fairly shortly. Whether they'll have the tests, Comparo tests, as I call them, or not, remains to be seen. But the Bronco is going to be an interesting test for Ford. The Bronco is not known. The old Broncos are not known to very many of the current generation of kids that are buying Jeeps.
Correct.
But those of us who had Broncos, as in my case, my first vehicle, and loved it passionately, but are now much older, may or may not be past wanting to buy the new version of the Bronco. I have not bought a Wrangler because I'm, you know, too old to want a Wrangler type of Jeep. And I think it'll be interesting to see whether I would like to buy a Bronco when it gets on a dealership near us. And I have been invited to maybe spec out one of the dealership's orders on a Bronco, because I told that dealership owner that I had first owned, my first vehicle had been a Bronco. And, you know, as I said in last week's show, I think it cost me under $4,000 loaded with just about every imaginable option that was available back in 1969 when I ordered the car. So the Bronco versus the Jeep is out there for the world to see, and we're going to see whether Ford can put a stop to some of the Wrangler orders, or whether the Wrangler owners are going to be so passionate that they will stay steadfastly Jeep owners and not go the Bronco way.
So here's what I think. I think that in this case, it'll benefit both, because I think that you are not taking away Jeep Wrangler owners. They are not going to go from one to the other. We've seen that in pickup trucks. We see that in every aspect of life. When there's a binary choice, people go to one or go to the other, and it's very hard to sway them from one to the other. I think in attracting new buyers, there will be a competition.
Right.
And that can only, I would say, benefit even Jeep, because it's just going to create more awareness for this type of rock, quote-unquote, rock-climbing vehicle. So here's my two cents. Who in the world goes rock climbing? First of all, around here, we don't have a lot of rocks to go climbing. We may have dirt roads and trails, and that's about the extent of it. The difference between the two, as you pointed out, Robin, are very slim, but there are some fundamental differences. The Bronco, they're both body-on-frame chassis, so they're quote-unquote.
I don't think the Bronco is, but it doesn't matter.
Hmm? They both are. The Bronco is based on the Ford Ranger pickup. And the major difference between the two is the front suspension on the Bronco is an independent suspension, which by anybody's account is a way more modern type of suspension. But in very extreme conditions, it may be less effective than the solid axle of the Jeep Wrangler. On the other hand, it certainly will drive better. It certainly will have less wobble, you know, that center wobble that Jeeps are notorious for. That's a sure thing. And then we'll see. But it's interesting to see that there are already so many different models. And on the face of it, you would think that you have a lot of choice. But in the end, as always, dealers are going to stock what they think they can sell, and you're going to be driven to a lot, and then you'll end up buying one or the other and typically paying a lot more than the $29,000 base model, which
no
I said
kidding. And I don't think
that
you'll see a base model
with the standard, with the stick shift and two-door base steel wheels, and that would be my way of going Ford Bronco. But then again, I have no desire to buy one, but I respect anybody who wants to go rock climbing.
Right. Well, there we go. So, Jay, are you going to talk about the Stellantis?
So Stellantis is the intergalactic new name for the merged companies, FCA and PSA. And as somebody pointed out, you know, calling the company FCA-PSA would be kind of hard to pronounce. So Fiat Chrysler Automobiles. That's the merger that happened a few years ago, 10 years ago, between Fiat and Chrysler. That new company or newish company is now about to merge with Peugeot, the group PSA in France. And it's a merger that will make the two companies combined the third or fourth largest car company in the world. And although I've been very pessimistic about FCA finding a partner, because they've been trying to find a partner for a long time. Sergio Marchionne, when he was still the CEO and before he died about a year ago, was actively trying to strike deals. He tried with GM, he tried with Renault, he tried with pretty much everybody out there. And in the end, Mike Manley from FCA, CEO of FCA, and Carlos Tavares, who is the CEO of Peugeot, struck a deal. And the paperwork is obviously extensive. The French government has a 10 or 12% stake in Peugeot. There are a lot of issues and challenges to overcome. But the merger is set to be completed in the first part of 2021. And it's a merger of equals, so it's a 50-50, straight down the middle partnership. But Carlos Tavares will be the CEO of the company. And this is a car guy who is notorious for moving very quickly. He engineered the buyout of Opel and Vauxhall from GM about a year ago. And GM had been losing money on their European operations with Opel and Vauxhall for a decade or so. And it took Tavares less than a year to make that unit profitable. The synergies are pretty substantial. Peugeot has a large car platform that will probably underpin the new large Fiat Chrysler vehicles. That would be my hunch. And the buying power of the two companies is just going to enable them to save gazillion dollars every year. So it actually could work. That's my take on it.
Okay. My take on it is less positive than your take on it, but I don't know as much about the PSA group as you do. I don't know why there's this merger is going on at all. I don't know why Chrysler or Jeep is so potentially negative about their future, because Jeeps, of course, are selling at rapid rates, and I suppose you could say that if Jeeps were the only vehicle, maybe there's a good reason for PSA merger, because they have alternatives. As you said, Jay, and a few shows back, the issue that is they're facing is the minivan issue, and somebody's got to drop their minivans, and PSA has got. Am I correct in saying PSI has got quite a good group of minivan vehicles to take to supply to the new merged corporation?
Yes, minivans and crossovers, large vehicles by European standards. But keep in mind, FCA has no platform. Platforms cost a lot of money to develop. They're all the smaller Jeeps are running on Fiat older platforms, and Fiat platforms are getting old, and they need to renew them, and they're just falling behind in developing these new platforms, and they have nothing for larger vehicles. The Jeep Grand Cherokee is still riding on a Mercedes platform, and so are all the Dodge, what do you call them, the Chargers,
the
Chrysler Durango. 300. Those things are running on Mercedes platforms from the early 2000s. So,
yeah, but those platforms are not really obsolete.
They're totally obsolete.
No, they aren't. I'll disagree, because I think that if they were really obsolete, they wouldn't be so successfully, have lasted so successfully so long. But let's say that you're right. I just don't know why FCA had to do it. What they need to really do is get rid of the Fiat brand of vehicles, because Fiat doesn't have anything that's any good, as far as I can see, for the American market, as has been.
They don't have anything good for the European market.
Well, you're right. They've got Maserati in their camp. They've got Alfa Romeo in their camp, and Alfa Romeo's going nowhere in the U.S., and I don't know what they're doing in Europe, but I don't think they're doing great. And as you say, maybe they have nothing in their camp in Europe as well.
So I see the platforms, sharing platforms. I think the engineering on the Peugeot side is
excellent.
Yes.
Okay.
And but they don't have a lot of product, and they have no presence on the American market. But they have a strong presence in Europe, they have a strong presence in the Middle East, and they have a strong presence in Africa. One of the other reasons, other than synergies of platforms and buying power, is that they both need to do a lot of catch-up work. Neither one of those two companies have spent any energy, money on developing electric vehicles.
Right. But PSA has.
That is crazily expensive.
Yep.
And so they're going to share the cost on that. And that's where, you know, a good chunk of the market is going in the next 10, 20 years.
Jill, how much time do we have?
You've got 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go back to Stellantis for one humorous point, because I'm looking at an article here in a section of Automotive News. It's titled, Take Two Stellantis and Call Me in the Morning. And they start out by saying, Zestril, Norvasc, Stellantis, Ozempic, as if it's a drug. That's what the word sounds like. And I'm told in this, or I'm reading in this article, that the name Stella is based on the means to brighten with the stars. And it's based on the Latin verb stello. And there's no explanation given for the second half. But the good news of this, and we'll quit with this, is that Stellantis is only going to be used at the corporate level. There isn't going to be a national. You're not going to be going to buy a Jeep at a dealership named Stellantis near you.
So let's talk for a second, if we only have a couple of minutes, about registration of cars.
Yes, let's do that.
You wanted to talk about it, and I have a few things to
say. Yeah, okay. My thing about registrations in Connecticut is that because I have a car out of registration right now by 2 months, and I went online, and you cannot get on the Connecticut DMV line, at least when I've tried 4 times so far.
Really?
Because it's overloaded, and it can't take everybody. And it says, come back later. But to that end, any car whose registration expired between March 1st and June 30th is automatically extended for 6 months.
All right, and that is true. I would suggest, though, that you try. We have spent much time on the Connecticut DMV site in the last couple of weeks and gotten through each time. So.
Well, I tried to do it at 7:30 this morning, and
I'm simply saying this.
I do want to warn people. I think the way to go to register a car is to make an appointment, which is fairly easy to do.
This is if you purchase one.
To get and go in person. Now, I've been told, however, that you still don't get your plates immediately, and that
up to six weeks or more.
But I'm about to find out.
Yeah.
Right, well, I read it online this morning on the DMV that you could be waiting 6 weeks or more to get your plate.
Yes, that is true, and that was pre-COVID, by the way.
Some dealers I have seen advertise that they could deliver plates, but that's because I think they were stocked with plates. But if they're out of plates, they have to get new ones, and that may be where the delay comes in.
All right. We will have to continue this because at this moment we are out of time. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.